You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The story you're about to hear is in only one other gospel, Matthew. They both take place in the region of Tyre and Sidon, which means Jesus has left the building. He's in foreign territory. In Matthew's telling, this is one of the only times Jesus goes out of Jewish territory. In fact, Matthew's Jesus tells his disciples to stay away from Gentiles and Samaritans, probably because Matthew is the most Jewish of the Gospels and works really hard to take into account Jewish sensibilities. So just being around Canaanites, Gentiles, Roman culture, etc., makes one unclean. There are a couple of other big differences, too. In Mark, Jesus is so tired and so aggravated with the way things are going, he goes to Tyre and Sidon alone to get as far away as he can, where in Matthew, the whole gaggle of disciples is with him and are involved in the story. So check it out. For Mark's Jesus, this is a moment of personal transformation. Jesus' encounter with the Syrophoenician woman is the motivation for him to redouble his efforts with the Gentiles. For if you read the next little bit in Mark, right after this, Jesus intentionally heads over to what is now Syria to feed 4,000 pagans. Now that took some chutzpah.
Our words of wisdom today are from Mark 7, verses 25 through 30. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about Jesus, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. Jesus said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home, found the child lying on the bed, and the demon gone. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Jesus loves the little children, all the children of the world, red and yellow, black and white, they are precious in his sight. Really? What about the racist Jesus? It's not a passage that you hear preached on a lot, and if you do, you've got people scrambling to try to soften a dehumanizing ethnic slur being leveled at a woman with a sick child by Jesus. When we're faced with the realities of personal and institutional and global racism, it inspires us to think of Jesus as transcending them all and loving all peoples regardless of skin color or culture of origin. But no matter how you want to dance around it to avoid this uncomfortable truth, it's right there in the text. Jesus utters a racial slur. Now, granted, Jesus has come all this way to get away from people and their demands. They're pushing in on him for healing. It made sense to go all the way to some place like Tyre, where no one would know him and he could have some relief. But no, his reputation was too much to keep quiet. So, right when he gets away from it all, here's someone else in need of help. So he denies any responsibility. Then he insults her, "You dog." What a jerk. Most of us don't know what to make of an exhausted and grumpy Jesus, and worse, don't like the demeaning way he treats this desperate woman. Commentators go out of their way to try to say how Jesus didn't really mean what he said. But it's hard to deny when reading the text. When confronted with the Gentile pagan woman in this story, Jesus explains that his message and ministry are for Israelites only, a comment of ethnic exclusion and prejudice that calls to mind a similar refrain in our own day and age. Does anyone not agree that we have a problem? And it's something that we're soaked in from birth. In a lot of subtle and not so subtle ways, it's further reinforced by our system itself. Jesus, as a good Jew, would have likely been reared to offer the daily prayer of thanks that he was born a Jew, not a Gentile, a man and not a woman. Is there any way he or the writer of Mark could not help but be influenced by such sexist and racist conditioning? Now, this whole scene might be hard for some to fathom, to even think that Jesus was grumpy, let alone a racist. But we have to be honest about what's in the text. Jesus not only refuses her request, but calls her a dog, which is a huge insult in the Middle East to this day. Nevertheless, she persisted. She's heard it all before. But she knows that her life matters and that her daughter's life matters. What parent wouldn't do whatever it takes to ease the pain of their child? And for that, we can join Chris Piat and say, let us give thanks for fierce mothers and pushy women. She's pagan, a Canaanite, historically the mortal enemies of the Jews, and yet for the sake of her child, she goes to Jesus with an appeal for healing. Despite Jesus' dismissive, ugly, and dehumanizing comment, she's not going to be dismissed. Her response is so shrewd, so clever, that Jesus is jolted into a new way of thinking. I think it's the only instance in the Gospels where Jesus is shown to change his mind. For his part, Jesus not only grants that the daughter be healed, but immediately heads off to what is now Syria to feed 4,000 pagans. Wow. Now, this is ancient Jewish storytelling tradition. There are countless stories that have this exact same model of argument. Finally, the one making the appeal makes such a clever or novel response that the other person gives in or can say nothing else. But here's the rub. In the Gospels, Jesus is usually the one making the clever comments to which there can be no response, like, let the one who is without sin cast the first stone. But here, it's a woman, and a foreign woman at that, and an opportunity for Mark to show just how wide the boundaries of God's grace are. Like Paul, the scales fall from Jesus' eyes as he listens to her and sees her for what she truly is, a woman of great trust, a moral exemplar, and his teacher. Jesus does the most difficult thing for those of us born into the privilege of dominance. He listens, and then he allows himself to be fundamentally changed. When it happens, when we finally have ears to hear, we'll never be the same. We'll never be able to listen to the lies of the dominant system of oppression the same way again. But if we can admit that we live in a culture where racism is planted deep within us, programmed into us without our permission, then maybe, just maybe, we can take a step towards genuine transformation. Reverend David Henson writes, you see, when Jesus listened to the Syrophoenician woman, he'd heard not only the truth of her reality, he also heard the brokenness of his own reality. Both must happen in order to confront racism. We must be able to hear the realities of the oppressed and disenfranchised as true. This, in and of itself, can be difficult for those of us who are members of a privileged race or gender. To accept a foreign reality without qualifications, to listen without interrupting, to hear without reworking their experiences into the dominant cultural narratives embedded within us. But we must also be able to hear the brokenness of our own realities and our own stories. We must own our own incompleteness. We must hear how our knee-jerk reactions, like, "you dog," perpetuate oppression. You know, I grew up hearing people say, "well, Jesus knows our griefs and our struggles." Okay, then can we say that Jesus knows our racism? In our story today, we have a huge gift. We get a glimpse into Jesus changing his mind, into the good news of Jesus refusing to remain bound by his upbringing and cultural expectations, of a day when Jesus could say, "I learned something today." Now, I know, according to claims of some around Fountain Hills, we don't teach the Bible at the fountains. We also deny Jesus, but all of this is code for we don't spout the party line of conventional Christianity. We aren't afraid to stare down these difficult passages and embrace a difficult reality. We don't try to sugarcoat it with a simple, "Jesus loves you," and move on. Jesus does love you, but also expects you to change and then change the world. So can you join me in seeing that this passage, as uncomfortable as it may be, is challenging us? Even though we may live within a stew of prejudice, we don't have to give in to our racist programming. What reveals who we really are is how we respond when confronted with the stories of the excluded or the oppressed. Do we continue to ignore or deny those realities of oppression? Do we make excuses? Do we mock them, continue to brush them aside as dogs? Or can we, like Jesus, do the miraculous? Can we listen to them and let the power of their reality change us? And we all have our Canaanite women, but maybe they're wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. Maybe they live in Gaza City. Maybe they're standing outside Home Depot looking for day labor. Maybe they're doing the best they can learning English as they can't quite get your order right at the drive-thru. Maybe they're from Guatemala or El Salvador, and maybe they've sent their child on a dangerous and uncertain journey to a faraway place that, despite what we would think is conventional wisdom, may be less risky than staying at home. Do we call them dogs and send them away? Or, like Jesus, do we stop and find ways to listen? Are we willing to be transformed by the reality of someone else's life? Isn't that what this story is all about? It compels us to overcome our knee-jerk dismissal of people, to own our own prejudices, and listen to those with such different realities than our own that we let that experience change our own reality. Who we are now is not who we have the chance to become. To that end, starting on July 20th, I want to invite you to participate in a challenge that a number of churches are taking part in. The 21-Day Racial Equity Habit Building Challenge was developed by a diversity educator and provides links to readings, podcast excerpts, and video clips that will help participants deepen their understanding of racism and examine their own biases. How do we respond when confronted with the stories of the excluded or the oppressed? Do we continue to ignore or deny these realities of oppression, make excuses, mock them, brush them aside? Or can we, like Jesus, do the miraculous? Can we listen to them and let the power of their reality transform us? Watch for details in eStreams next week and in our announcements next Sunday morning. We don't know if today's story from Mark is just a story or if it contains some kernel of truth from the life of the historical Jesus, but there are some hints that it might have a nugget of history to it. After all, it's in our first gospel, Mark. It's toned down in the second and then completely left out in Luke and John, both of which would have had a decidedly more Greek and pagan audience. And maybe as the Jesus movement became more Greek, it was easier just to leave out any comments by Jesus that might have come off as a little racist. But then we miss the transformation, a model that we all need to see. Because I don't mean to shock you, but from what I can see, our community, our state, our country still has a lot of people on its dog list. People who know what it's like to be shut out, denied justice, told to wait, disrespected, given second best, threatened, mistreated, and outright killed. The Syrophoenician woman gives them a voice. Jesus listened to that voice. And for those of us with ears to hear, those voices still need to be heard. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.